Welcome to American Unhinged. I'm Amber May, filling in for Dr. John Diamond, and I just want to welcome you to the program. I have a great show for you today. I have a Mexican cartel expert joining me today. We're going to talk about the border issues and what they're not telling you about the borders and the Mexican cartel. But before we get into that, I want to go over a verse of the day, and that comes from John 15:13. Greater love has no one than this, than one who lays down his life for a friend. That is a verse that the law enforcement community uses on a regular basis when someone dies in the line of duty. And I thought that was going to be a great verse today, just because we are talking to a law enforcement officer and we're going to be talking about law enforcement. No greater love than this. I mean, our law enforcement officers are willing to lay down their life for strangers, for the community that they're involved in and the community that they live in and are a part of. And so I wanted to share that with you. But coming up next is Jason Jones. But first, we have a commercial break.
The Cali Key easily converts your AR rifle to bolt action, allowing you to keep the rifle you love in assault weapon jurisdictions. The Cali Key is a true fast drop-in solution. No permanent changes to your rifle. Import, transport, own, and have fun with your AR. Why the Cali Key? Because a bolt action is not an assault weapon. Stay future ready from gun bans with the Cali Key. The Cali Key also lets you quickly and easily build your ideal hunting rifle, lets you build a quiet suppressed rifle, and benefits your long-range precision shooting. Available now at CaliKey.com with free shipping.
Your own government has the power to activate a kill switch on all telecommunications, instantly shutting down all private phone calls and texts. An EMP weapon or solar flare can achieve the same result. Rolling blackouts or permanent power outages will also take out the power supply to cell tower antennas, rendering mobile devices all but useless. During these emergencies, how do you stay in touch with the important people in your life anywhere on the planet? The answer? Is the Bivy Stick at SAT123.com. The Bivy Stick is a two-way satellite text messaging device that uses a satellite constellation, not cell towers, to send and receive text messages. It works anywhere on planet Earth, including in war zones or blackout areas. In unpredictable times, the Bivy Stick helps you stay connected when it matters most. Visit SAT123.com to get one while they're still available.
Hey, well, welcome back to American Unhinged. Like I said, I'm Amber May, filling in for Dr. John Diamond, and I want to welcome my guest, Jason Jones. Welcome, Jason, to our program. I'm so excited to have you today.
Oh, well, thanks for having me. It's good to be back with you.
Just so my audience knows, you are a part of Border 911, which is something put on by the America Project, and that's how we found each other. And you're a retired captain from the Department of Public Safety out of Texas. And I just thought, you know, I shared the verse, John 15, because no greater love than this. You know, when a law enforcement officer, you know, leaves this earth, that really unpacks the family. So I just want to talk briefly, because we're going to get into the cartel and the Border Patrol and obviously all law enforcement that are involved, local law enforcement that are involved, and that impacts everybody. How does law enforcement life is different than any other lifestyle that I know of? When you're a soldier, you go and you serve your tour and then you get a break. When you're a law enforcement officer, you don't have a tour. You're on duty 24/7, 7 days a week, even though you might have a day off. you're supposed to act if you see a criminal activity happen. So can you briefly share with us what it's like on the family, what it's like on the officers themselves as they deal with their career on a day-to-day basis?
Yeah, sure. And it's good to be with you. I think that most Americans would be stunned at what your law enforcement go through today. And it's different at each level. You know, when you're a local law enforcement officer, which I was a deputy before I went to the state police with the Hayes County Sheriff's Office. You know, you really feel the impact and the difference you can make as a single individual when you make the arrest of a burglar or something like that. And that really inspires you because you can truly make a difference in your local community. When you go and you look at what state or federal law enforcement are doing, a lot of people may be stunned. You know, I moved 9 times across the state of Texas during my career. Now, that's just me at a state level. So, you know, I think people forget that at a state and at a federal level, you know, you're doing different tours of duty, either across a state or across a country. I spent a lot of time away from my family because there were times that, like, I'll give you a great example in 04, just being away, I was too concerned for my family to be down there. So I left them in Austin while I was stationed on the border. And that was a decision we made. But it's just an example of the challenges that families are facing in law enforcement today. If you're in the federal government, you know, you're moving across the country, sometimes the world, in the service of the country. So with all that said, though, I will tell you this, to serve something and a cause bigger than yourself is a fantastic thing, and it humbles you beyond belief. So I'm very honored to have said that I've been able to do what I've done and to work with incredible people who serve something bigger than themselves. I think we forget that. You know, we also forget the tradecraft today that they are up against. This isn't 1960 and 70. What law enforcement is up against today, especially at your southwest border, is tradecraft that domestic law enforcement at local, state, and federal levels have never witnessed before. The largest U.S. intelligence collection against U.S. law enforcement is occurring from the Halcon network along the southwest border. So these officers are under tremendous stress. It's also why you see great example of that Border Patrol having so many suicides last year and just the sheer amount of people that are crossing. So, you know, these are incredible people. And, you know, I was honored to serve with them. And I will say it again and again, and I say it on national television. I'll say it here and I say it privately, that those who serve today are truly the American vanguards of our nation.
100%. I totally agree with that, because it is hard on the, especially in the husband, wife, parent relationship, because there's a lot of sacrifice that that is involved when they are married into the law enforcement family. It's not just a regular job. I oftentimes, like, if you're on call, like maybe like you were a supervisor, you were a captain in DPS, you were on call, I'm going to guess 24 hours, 7 days a week, because at any point in time, you would have had to go to a scene to be in command and take charge of that scene. So that means, like, the wife, the kids are going to go long periods of time without seeing the husband, the dad, which brings that can bring a lot of loneliness. And I think that people don't often think about that, where the family really has to switch in a ways that they have to figure out ways to live a daily life without their significant other. But then once the significant other is off work and can be a part of the family again, like, there's just a different dynamic. There's what I'm understanding when you're in a law enforcement family, because at any point in time, you could get that phone call and you have to go. And you've had those phone calls. I mean, I saw you on Border 911. I heard about that insurrection that happened across the border where people were dying, innocent people were dying, and you had to respond to that and take care of that. And it's not like one of those jobs where, like, you're at a birthday party or you're somewhere having fun. You can't just say, sorry, boss, I'm not coming into work. No, like, people's lives depend on what you do.
No, that's well said. And you're absolutely right. I mean, you know, most of these men and women are on call 24/7. And so, you know, they'll be out with a movie with their family and their pager, or their phone goes off and off they go. And I can't, and you heard me, pager. See, I just aged myself. I can't tell you how many times that happens, but it's part of it. And, you know, those who serve know it. They know it going into this, and they wouldn't have it any other way. You know, they know that their job is to protect the people of their communities, and they're willing to do that. And I think, and it's part of why I do what I do now, because their story hasn't been told. especially by somebody who's done their job. And that's why I was so frustrated when I retired from the state police that I decided to illuminate what was happening in Mexico. And then along the way, it really became illuminating also the great work of what men and women at local, state, and federal law enforcement are doing in this country. And that's why I travel all over. It's not just the border. I mean, I was in Philadelphia with federal law enforcement officers up there trying to illuminate what was happening. Because the other part of this is that if we're really going to make the distinction of what's happening with transnational crime and crime in our country, those who are on the front lines, as fast as that, as fast as it moves, transnational crime would stun the average American. And it's why we have so many challenges there. But if you really want to illuminate, you've got to be there on the front lines as these law enforcement officers are fighting it and combating it. And that's what we're trying to do.
Yeah, so let's talk about the transnational crime that's happening right now. So fill us in on what's going on as we speak, because some major stuff's happening.
Yeah, you know, let me tell you, in December, we saw a major shift happen at our border in policy. And at the time in December, if you may remember, at the Southwest border, you had 256,000 apprehensions in just 1 month at your Southwest border, 256,000. And then in January, those numbers dropped tremendously to about 154,000. Now, why is the question? That's because the Biden administration began utilizing what they call the CBP-1 app, telling people that if you want to cross into the United States, fill out this app in Mexico. And then once they reach you, you'll be able to be processed legally into the U.S. Whether we agree with it or not, that's what was being allowed. And the goal there was to shift all these people crossing between the ports, working and having to work with the alien smuggling organizations and the cartels to the ports to create a safer, faster process for them. Here's the problem. That 100,000 that backed up from December to January remained in Mexico. And now you're seeing all the plazas along the frontera are completely full with people. They have paid the tax. They've paid the peso to the cartels. They're frustrated because the CBP-1 app has not been working. And they are surging, getting ready to surge into the United States. We're starting to see that overflow right now. It's over 2,000. And they're still crossing, have been crossing back to back in Brownsville, Texas. Now, if you don't know where Brownsville is, that is down near the Gulf. I was stationed in Brownsville for a year with the narcotics service. That's the Plaza of Matamoros is under the current control of Cartel de Gafo, known as CDG. And they are pushing thousands of people across right now. And it's going to continue, guys. May 12th and May 11th are upon us. And that's the end of Title 42. The plazas full of people have already paid their tax. They're frustrated because the CBP-1 app is not working. And so guess what? They are about to surge in large numbers. You're going to see it play out in May. I've been warning it was coming. However, where most of the people on the national stage have it wrong, you're hearing from the U.S. intelligence agencies, we'll see about 18,000 a day consistently after that. That's wrong. You're going to see a significant surge. Then you're going to see it slow down. What they won't tell you, though, is the why. And the why to that is because the cartels are going to push everybody through. It's already paid. And then those who haven't, they're going to hold them up until they get their payment worked out or their debt bondage into the country for years to come worked out and how they'll make their payments. That's how it really works. The nation's fixing to see it unfold.
And it's just, no words, right? Like, it's hard for me to understand how we have a government, and the federal government's main job is to protect the homeland. That's their main purpose of even existing. Yeah. It blows my mind that they're behind all this and that they are okay with it. I think it goes back to the plot, you know, against the United States. Like, there is a group of very powerful people who would love to see this turn into a communist country. And one way you do that is you put chaos everywhere and you get your law enforcement so wrapped up and setting out fires everywhere that they take the people's protection away from them because they're so focused on this fire needs to get put out and that fire needs to put out. So it's this whole thing has been by design, because if the federal government wanted to shut the border down, they could shut the border down. They're just choosing not to. And you said something to me on the last episode we were on, and I just thought it was very fascinating. You have been pushing for our federal government to recognize the cartel as a terrorist organization, but they have not. Can you talk to us about that?
Sure. I spent a lot of time combating the cartels and building programs to go after them. The Los Zetas were so hyper-violent on the Mexican people and on migrants coming through the country. you know, that story of how bad that was and what we were up against as law enforcement, at some point it's going to come out as to just this true evolution of these cartels, as they not only went from organized crime into an insurgency, but into terrorism. And, you know, the mass murders of migrants of 72 in San Fernando, the killing of 300 men, women, and children in Allende, where they were chopped into pieces and then Guiso turned into ash, because cartels have a saying that you can't count a body that doesn't exist. This evolution has to be known to the American people, because where we are right now, we still look at these cartels as drug cartels. That is not what they are. Yes. It's something they do. It is not what they are anymore. And so what I've been trying to do since I retired is to illuminate their operations so that we can eliminate it. And the very first thing I knew is that we had to designate them as foreign terrorist organizations. And I've been at that since just after I retired in August of 2016. And there are a lot of issues why the terrorism designation hasn't happened. I'm on my third bill, just so everybody knows, with Congressman Chip Roy right now to get the designation to occur. But it's how broken our government is. Now, the question you have to ask, though, is why do we need the terrorism designation? You know, you got to remember, we've been at this supposed drug war for 60 years. But what the American people haven't been told is that we have used an investigative model, utilizing our Department of Justice and our U.S. Fourth Amendment. Our Fourth Amendment was designed to keep all of us safe from unreasonable searches and seizures by our government, meaning that when we are targeted as Americans, every T is crossed, every I is dotted, and that those investigators have to go from mere suspicion to reasonable suspicion to build probable cause against us. And that process takes a very long time by design. We want that when our government targets us. Mm-hmm. However, when you are targeting transnational crime, because that process moves very slow, it has proven multiple times over and over again to fail. I'll give you some great examples of that. One, the drug war, because we're trying to fight transnational crime globally that moves very rapidly. DOJ can't take that on. That is proven now. Look at prior to 9/11, when we had the first World Trade Center attack. What did we do afterward? We tried to use the Department of Justice to go after Al-Qaeda and others, and it brought us 9/11. When will the lesson be learned? So what the terrorism designation does is it puts speed into our system. I'll give you a great example of that. You hear, you know, we need to follow the money, right? We need to go after the money. And it sounds absolutely right, because it is right. Mm-hmm. An organization cannot operate as a dark network if it doesn't have money. But here's the issue with that the American people aren't told by all these talking heads on national television, because none of them have had to build mere suspicion, reasonable suspicion, and probable cause. And they move their money very rapidly and quickly. If we get the terrorism designation outside the boundaries of our country, we can go after their assets real time, just as we do terrorists. And that's how you win. That's part of it. So that's why I've been working so hard. Now, domestically, we're always going to use our Fourth Amendment on anything that we do, because that's the way it works in our country under our Constitution. And that's what we want. But when we're going after terrorists globally, which is exactly what these cartels are, this is how we can dismantle their organizations and attack the network, where you're going after the lawyers and you're going after the accountants. Because you have to remember, when you think of the cartels today, they are operating like a Fortune 500 company. That's why we go after the capos and the leaders, because the DOJ strategy sets you up for that. That's why it has failed. So you chop the head off the snake, and what happens? The head grows right back within a matter of hours.
That's true. Oh my gosh. So you touched on something, and I think we need to deep dive just a tad, because you talked about how the cartel are not just drug cartel anymore. And when did this fundamental change happen with the cartel to being your local street gang feeding drugs, you know, to the local street gang, to organization, just like you described? When did that shift happen? How did it happen?
Sure. They were organized crime prior to 2006. You know, you go do a dope deal with these cartels. I used to buy dope from the Zetas in the Gulf when I was a narcotics agent in Brownsville. And you're going to go do a dope deal at 7 p.m., let's say, right? That dope deal may go at 10 o'clock or 2 a.m. in the morning. And when the Calderon administration began utilizing their military to go after them, what we in the United States completely missed that was happening in Mexico is the corruption within local, state, and federal law enforcement and within the Mexican military was unprecedented. And that's where we saw the insurgency from 06 to 2010, as these cartels utilizing everything from RPGs, light anti-tank weapons, 40 millimeter grades, first generation armored vehicles back then, today they're up to fourth generation, began utilizing their tactics to truly fight the government of Mexico. That was a tectonic shift that occurred, because what the Zetas brought to the cartel world was tradecraft. They said they were going to be somewhere at 9. They were there at 8:30, prepped and ready to roll at 9. This was something in the criminal underworld was completely a shift. And so what it forced was all of the other cartels to rise and create their enforcement wings. This is where Los Anthrax came from. This is where La Línea came from. This is where all these other enforcement wings came from within these other cartels. And Ocio Cardenas, the former leader of the Gulf cartel, who's in a U.S. prison right now, will tell you that the Los Zetas were extremely loyal and disciplined. And that's what they brought to the Mexico game. And that's where the shift happened. Now, the corruption was already there. The corruption had already gone. And that's what forced the Calderon administration to utilize their military, because they realized their government was far too entwined at so many levels within their country. And you see that playing out now with the Hugs for Not Bullets strategy under the AMLO administration.
And isn't it true that, and maybe it's not, so you're going to correct me if I'm wrong, but isn't it true that the politicians in Mexico that wanted to end the corruption and the cartel ended up going after them and murdering them? I think I remember seeing a video or a picture you showed me in the presentation about a mayor in Mexico and his car being blown up and he survived. Are there the politicians that are trying, but then the corruption?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Listen, I want to be very clear. There have been some incredible men and women who have stood and been killed in a matter of hours. There was a man, and I want to say it was 2010, 2011, who was a private contractor, became the police chief in Nuevo Laredo. And within hours, the Zetas executed him in his car. And then through propaganda, put it out all over to make sure everyone remembered who was really in charge. This is how it works. The problem is that the American people haven't been told. And so this is why we, all of us, are feeling the influx of this transnational crime. And we've got to take it on. Look, you can want to do everything you want to do in this country to fight transnational crime, from human smuggling to human trafficking to the drug trafficking. If you don't take on these cartels, they are the hub of it. So if you want to impact all of those things, and you've got to take on the Mexican cartels, because everything under their area of control, which is why they battle for control. So let's just talk about a span of control. In Mexico, we call municipalities for cities, et cetera. They call them plazas, okay? And so you truly have a plaza boss that is in control of everything within that area. And so that's how and why these cartels battle for that control. And then everything that operates within that, they get the piece or the tax for. And this is the way they have true control of those areas, but also have become a parallel government in so many plazas and areas across Mexico. And they utilize that same strategy in how they get involved in corruption in the United States as well. Same things they do in Mexico, they're doing here.
That's my next question for you. If we have this open border, we're getting the influx, the cartel is here in the United States. Could we possibly be in a place like Mexico where now they're controlling our government officials to where now we have a parallel government? Is that something that you see as a possibility here in the United States?
If we continue to do nothing, all you have to do and look is what is happening in Mexico will come here. And you see it in so many things. You see it in the drug trafficking. You see it in the production of narcotics now taking place here, like methamphetamine and fentanyl labs here, not just in Mexico. If you look at the adjustment from human smuggling into the trafficking people, just like occurring in Mexico, it's now happening here. If you look at the assassinations that they do in Mexico, now happening here, that I've worked several of in Texas, from decapitations to the execution of a lawyer in South Lake, Texas, never mind the other executions are conducting across this country. If you wonder where this ends, that's exactly where it ends. But I will also say this, it will be much harder on them to take over in the US than it is in Mexico, because we have different local, state, and federal law enforcement agencies. And we're just designed different than Mexico is. So If you look at what's happening in the level of corruption along the southern border, you see sheriffs, not just deputies, but sheriffs right. being taken down. You see Border Patrol agents who have been corrupted in our federal system. So it's not a perception that they're doing it. They are doing it, period. They're doing it. But what we have to do is create policies and get authorities that allow us to truly target and go after them. And I will tell you this as somebody that has done it. Don't let anyone tell you that this isn't fixable. But I can tell you, we can't bring a 1980 strategy to a 2023 problem and expect success. You are seeing the same old thing from the Department of Justice, and they will continue to fail until they make adjustments. Period. That's just the way it's going to be.
Jason, you are bringing so much information to us, but we got to take a quick break, and then we're coming back with Jason Jones right now.
Your own government has the power to activate a kill switch on all telecommunications, instantly shutting down all private phone calls and texts. An EMP weapon or solar flare can achieve the same result. Rolling blackouts or permanent power outages will also take out the power supply to cell tower antennas, rendering mobile devices all but useless. During these emergencies, how do you stay in touch with the important people in your life anywhere on the planet? The answer is the Bivy Stick at SAT123.com. The Bivy Stick is a two-way satellite text messaging device that uses a satellite constellation, not cell towers, to send and receive text messages. It works anywhere on planet Earth, including in war zones or blackout areas. In unpredictable times, the Bivy Stick helps you stay connected when it matters most. Visit SAT123.com to get one while they're still available.
All right, what's up, everybody? My name is Scott Armstrong from Rebunked.News, Pirate Stream Media, The Last American Vagabond, and The Unjected Show, coming at you live in Nashville from the Reawaken America Tour. And you're tuned in to The Uncensored Truth on Brighteon TV.
The world we once knew is collapsing. We're being warned to expect rolling blackouts, and our political leaders are deliberately shutting down pipelines, fuel refineries, nuclear power plants, and energy exploration. The currency is collapsing, while financial assets are plummeting in value, and the global food supply is being deliberately decimated. To survive this war being waged on humanity, you need more than just regular prepping. You need resilient prepping. And that's the title of my new free audiobook, Resilient Prepping. You can download the entire audiobook and a printable PDF transcript for free right now at resilientprepping.com. Resilient Prepping teaches practical strategies for prepping in three layers: high-tech, low-tech, and no-tech. Resilient Prepping is your ultimate guide to surviving the total collapse of the world as we know it, because that's exactly what globalists are trying to achieve. Download this entire audiobook for free right now at resilientprepping.com.
Welcome back to American Unhinged. I'm Amber May, filling in for Dr. John Diamond. Before I get back to my guest, Jason Jones, I just want to make a quick announcement. You know, local action creates national impact. We're going to be talking about solutions coming up in just a minute about what can we do with the cartel. But one thing we can also do is, if anyone is interested in helping Maricopa County out with recalls for the County Board of Supervisors, there's a group of citizens that are banding together to recall one of the County Board of Supervisors, one by one by one. A recall will happen with Katie Hobbs with a group of citizens, but that has to wait until after she's been in office 6 months. So if anyone wants to get involved in helping Maricopa County fight election integrity or win election integrity, go ahead and contact me at theambermayshow.com, hit the contact button and send me a note, and then I'll put you in contact with those that are involved with the recall efforts. Now, I want to welcome Jason Jones back to the program, because I want to talk about something that you hit. Okay, so now this is affecting the United States American citizen, and something you said in your presentation when I saw you was like, as long as it doesn't affect Americans, you know, they wouldn't get involved. You know, you kept trying to blow the whistle and say, hey, it is affecting American citizens. And you're like, as long as it stays in Mexico, but it's not staying in Mexico. And so what we're seeing, like you and I talked about on a previous show, that now the traffickers are taking people from the United States, right? And then going to Mexico. Did I remember that correctly?
You did. Yeah, we've had a lot of kidnappings of Americans taken back into Mexico and then being executed. You know, you're absolutely right. Let's go back to the era real quick. You know, when you think back to 2009 to 2016, and I was living and breathing this 24/7. I mean, we were nonstop. And at the time, where were we as a nation? You know, we were still looking at Middle East terrorism, what was happening overseas as the new problem was emerging, impacting this country. And so that's kind of where that was. And we were so frustrated what we were seeing as a state that I began working with my agency to travel the country and work with our partners in the U.S. intelligence agencies and others to try to really say, look, we've got challenges down here. We've got to look at things differently. The operations we were doing, working with the host country of Mexico, sharing intelligence with federal law enforcement, U.S. intelligence agencies, was too much. I mean, it was just too much to take on. And we had to change policy. And so, you know, I was pretty humbled to be selected to be able to travel the country, sit down with leadership, you know, in these U.S. intelligence agencies and try to get them to focus on the problem. And many of them were, but they would tell you the same thing, you know, back to back. Jason, we hear you. We want you to know that we hear you. But unfortunately, you know, as long as it's down there and it's not here, there's not much we're going to be able to do. And I just heard that back to back everywhere I went. I mean, everywhere I went. There was one agency that I can't mention where General Flynn was at the time. He was a 3-star U.S. intelligence agency. And he was the only one that was really open-minded to it. I mean, I sat down with a lot of leadership, a lot. And the frustration of knowing what was coming and not being able to stop it. That's why I'm doing what I'm doing today, because I know that if I use the tradecraft to really show how these cartels are, we wouldn't be where we are. We shouldn't be here. I mean, if anyone's under the impression that the U.S. intelligence agencies didn't know what was coming, you know, they know. They knew. But unfortunately, they didn't listen. And that's exactly why we're dealing with what we're dealing with. And this is something we've got to take on, because we look at our U.S. intelligence agencies as the all-seeing eye. And what we realize is that all-seeing eye has been blinded. And I was stunned at the lack of knowledge from the community as to what was happening in Mexico and the impact of this country. And there was a lot of reasons for it. One of them is the FBI's failed uniform crime reporting system that we were utilizing back then. You have to understand that system didn't capture transnational crime. So everything you and I have talked about was not captured in data. Now, they had a lot of classified and an intelligence report, unclassified reporting on what was happening in Mexico. And they can see that problem real time emerging and what was taking place. But when you're trying to shift multi-million dollar programs to focus on a new initiative and to re-steer an organization into new focuses, you have to be able to justify it in data. So many of them would say to me, Jason, I want you to know that I hear you. I want you to know that we see it in the intelligence reports, but we don't have the data on it. Well, they weren't lying either. And we in the South for the last 20 years haven't been lying. The problem is that the system that we use did not illuminate the problems of transnational crime. So now what the FBI has done is 2021 has gone to what they call their new system known as National Incident-Based Reporting. It captures 52 new index crimes. Here's the problem. It was they call it their new system. It was created in 1984, by the way, implemented in 1988. And right now is only in use in about 65%, somewhere in there, of the law enforcement agencies of the 18,000 across this country. So look, if you as a country and as law enforcement can't get the little things right, you're never going to get the big things right. And we aren't getting the little things right. And if we can't show the American people the data of how much dope is seized, the amount of extortions happening, the murders linked to transnational crime, the money laundering, the weapons trafficking, and the list goes on of all the crimes connected directly to these cartels and transnational criminal organizations and anything emerging, then what happens is when there is a major pivot, as we've seen from smuggling to the trafficking of debt bondage of people, you can't collect that. You don't see it happening, but yet your communities feel it. And that's why for 20 plus years, you've had governors after governors. You've had state police directors, sheriffs, and others coming out along the South saying, we've got problems, we've got problems. And the federal government saying, we hear you, but we don't see it. That's where the real failure is there. So when you talk about solutions, make no doubt, there are a lot of changes that we need to make. And I think in the coming decade, you're going to see law enforcement changes and really changes within the Department of Justice at an unbelievable level, at least in my time. Because if we don't, I can assure you this, we'll continue to fail.
And what solutions can all of us as everyday people have? Because sometimes we often think we can't fight City Hall, and that's a lie in itself. We can fight City Hall. The Revolutionary War was just regular people who fought City Hall and won against the king. You know, every civil rights was regular people who fought against a horrible way of living, because everyone is created equal. That's what our Constitution teaches us. That's what the Bible teaches us. We are all created equal. So regular people can do something. That's why I love what General Flynn said. I've held on to that. Local action creates national impact. So you're in Texas, I'm in Arizona, we're a border state. We feel it directly, the impact of the cartel. What can we do? What steps can we do? I think number one, share this video far and wide, because the American people need to know it's not on the evening news. Your networks, your NBCs, your CBSs, your CNNs, they are not sharing this information. So first step, I think, is share this far and wide. Jason, what ideas or what do you think us as regular citizens can do to help support the law enforcement and help fight back against the invasion?
Well, first they need to know what the problem is. And see, this is part of the issue. This is exactly why I'm doing what I'm doing with Border 911, with the America Project, partnering with Tom Holman, working on Newsmax, doing these podcasts back to back nonstop, because the American people don't know what the problem is and the solutions that we need to get to, then they can't mandate that from their local, state, and federal leaders, right? Who they have elected into office. So we've got to illuminate this problem. So let me give you some of the solutions that we need here when it comes to the transnational crime problem, period. We've got to do it. We have no choice. First, let's look at the closest yard line that we have got to fix. What is that? The overdose death crisis in this country, impacting families. There's no one that's not going to be impacted by this if we don't make major changes there. First, look at the data. The production of deadly fentanyl and now being mixed and creating of new deadly strains of fentanyl like parafentanyl, serafentanyl, and then overlaying it now with xylazine. That's truly the weaponization of fentanyl. There's two major cartels responsible for that, the Sinaloans and Cartel Jalisco New Generation. We need to target them and get them designated as foreign terrorist organizations. So everyone watching right now, that's what you need to request from your local, state, and federal leaders to get designated. Second, we've got to go after these labs and we've got to hit them. And when we get done hitting them, we got to hit them again and more and make major adjustments, because they're going from mega labs into micro labs right now to try to adjust from their model as the Mexican government is feeling pressure from the U.S. government. So we have to ensure that these labs are hit. The production of deadly fentanyl and methamphetamine under the current models, the domestic seizures of those two drugs, and then overlaid with the overdose deaths, really, which are poisonings. That focus has to be attacking the supply capability in the labs. You've got to mandate that from your federal government, period. Because I can tell you right now, as somebody that understands our processes in seizing narcotics, it's too slow. We will never be able to arrest or seize our way out of this. We've got to hit the labs. We've got to have a constant campaign all the way down to Colombia to do that. Because the cartels are adjusting out of Mexico as they see new enforcement efforts underway. The other part of this is what I talked a little bit with you about, and that is that we have got to get a system in this country that every year the American public, really, not every year, but monthly, knows what is happening in the crime trends in this country. Right now, go to the FBI. Go to their Uniform Crime Reporting and National Incident-Based Reporting System. Look at how broken it is. Mm-hmm. We've got 18,000 law enforcement agencies in this country. And I'll say it again and again, if we can't get the little things right, we'll never get the big things right. Those are major milestones that are going to set us up for success. The last part of this too is you've got to mandate enforcement action from your local attorneys, your DAs, and the U.S. attorneys in this country. I have to tell you, what we are seeing within the Department of Justice, the failure to enforce laws in this country, never seen anything like it. And people need to be held accountable and get your elected leaders. Those are true solutions that will make massive impact on transnational crime in this country. We make those changes. I will tell you right now, as somebody that has built programs to go after them, this is how we make major fixes. Now, beyond that, we've got institutionalized cowards in highly high positions within the Homeland Security enterprise from the federal agencies. We need a purge there. Now, look, I don't care about left or right. I don't care about politics. I'll be very frank with you. I care about what's happening with the American people, where we're going from the human smuggling into the trafficking of people. You know, and I'll give you a great example of what I'm talking about. The Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms Organization, right? The law enforcement agency. Incredible people there. And I've known many of them during my career. But I want to ask any reasonable and prudent person watching right now, is alcohol and tobacco a major issue as we're seeing adjustment from smuggling into the trafficking of people? Nope. You're going to see law enforcement agencies that we have known disappear if we get good leadership back in the White House who are going to make major changes. I don't care on either side. The crime trends that we're going to face in the next decade will stun the American people as America's new slave trade has returned. And we need hard solutions to go after them and fix it. Because I can tell you right now, as somebody that has gone after these cartels, this is fixable. Don't let anyone tell you it's not.
I think with every problem, there's always a solution. It's just a matter of, are we the people going to take your suggestions and pick up the phone, start calling, start emailing? I think we're the government at the end of the day. We the people are the government. And we have to get involved to help support our local community. Jason, I want to thank you so much for being a part of the program today. How do people keep up with you? How do people find you?
Sure. You can find me on Newsmax, or you can find me at jasonjones.com. That's jasonjones.com. We post every day on all the social media. We're trying to illuminate what these cartels are doing. And that's all I focus on with Newsmax. I'm their national border correspondent. So whether it's social media or whether it's here, wherever it is, that's all we focus on. I don't do politics or anything else. We're going to fix this. We are going to fix this. For what has happened to so many American families, so many Mexican families, and so many people around the world.
Well, thank you so much for your time. And I always look to you to give my viewers and listeners good intel on what's going on the border. So thank you so much for spending time with me today. Appreciate you.
Oh, it's great to be with you, as always, really. Thanks for having me today.
Bye-bye. That was Jason Jones. I really encourage you to keep following him because he has some great intel on what's happening at the border. I mean, I'm a border state. I can tell you this is happening. What I wanted to get into with Jason is the fact that there is a war, an all-out war on the border, and we didn't really get into it, but there are an all-out war that we as American citizens need to know. It happens in El Paso area. It happened. I know one time it was happening near San Diego. So this is something that people need to know, and it's not just in the in Mexico. It's now crossing the United States. And now here's something that people need to be aware of. Like, law enforcement is nervous when there is a missing child, because if it crosses the border, they know they're not going to be able to find that kid. So time is of the essence if someone goes missing here in the United States. And these people are cruel. They have no, it's like they've severed their conscience. They are so cruel. It doesn't matter if you're an innocent person, they will dismember you. I've seen videos myself where they have dismembered people. They cut off the head, they cut off the arms, they cut off the body. I've seen video where they will just shoot someone in an execution style. And a lot of times they're innocent people. It's really sad we didn't get into the rape trees. This happens on a regular basis. Women are giving birth control pills. Young girls are giving birth control pills because they know that they're going to be raped along the way. Like, whoever is involved with trafficking of these people, they'll hand them some packs of things that they can use along the way. And part of in those packs are birth control pills. And young girls, women, and I'm almost positive boys are in it too, where they will get raped on a regular basis. And what they'll do is they will tie a woman up to a tree, and they'll, several men will rape her in one sitting, and she's screaming and no one will help because everyone is so terrified that they're going to be murdered for helping this woman or this child with the rape. And then they'll hang her panties on the tree. And so you see this all across the desert. It's just disgusting. Oftentimes, our Border Patrol will find babies. They will throw babies into the river to deter law enforcement to go after the babies so that these people can escape law enforcement. It's sick. There's so many parents. It's such a heartbreaking thing for law enforcement, for Border Patrol, because they're getting these kids that are coming across the border, young kids that really don't know their parents' name. Because, you know, when you're a little child, you grow up and it's mom and dad. You don't know that their name is Sue and Jack. You don't know your last name. You don't know your address. And oftentimes, They're getting these kids. There's a protocol in place that they have to call this number and ask if this person is their relative. And if it is, they have to hand over the kid. They know oftentimes it's really not their relative. Their hands are tied. They're overrun. They don't know what to do. And when you hear the Border Patrol guys talk about this subject, it's these very strong men talk about what's happening at the border, and they start tearing up. And that's not a normal reaction for law enforcement or men in general. Men don't tend to get very emotional when they speak, but it tears them up so much inside. It's really hard because they're living this day after day, day after day. And when you talk to them, it kills them, it eats them up, and they start tearing up. And it was very profound because I've been able to talk over the summer to several Border Patrol agents, and bringing this up, and the child trafficking is what hurts like the most. They'll find kids oftentimes alone in the desert, like toddlers alone in the desert. Praise God they find them, because if not, you know, the coyotes will come, and I'm talking about the animal coyotes, will come and eat them, or whatever the case might be. It's disgusting. There's no regard for human life. And this is why this is an important subject and why I wanted to bring it to your attention today. And why taking those steps that Jason told us is so crucial. Because this is the most cruel form of slavery that there is. The left wants to tell you, or the deep state wants to tell you, we don't have slavery in this country anymore. That's not true. We have a prolific slavery going on. And it's the cruelest kind, because it's involving rape of kids and women and boys. It's drug smuggling. It's children being left in the desert. As long as the other people can escape, they'll leave the kids in the desert. Can you imagine being a 3 or 4 year old scared in the middle of the desert, in the middle of nowhere? And could you imagine what that was like? And they're crying, and sometimes the law enforcement community can't find them, can't get to them in time. And so when you talk to the Border Patrol guys, this is what comes to mind, and this is what eats them up alive. And they're overwhelmed, they're overworked. You just heard today about the influx that is coming, that's more so than what it was a few months ago. So the influx is going to be higher crime, there's less Border Patrol, there's less police. I'm telling you right now, there's like, people are retiring in the law enforcement community like crazy because the work is too much. It's too demanding. It's too stressful. The men don't sleep very well. They don't sleep very well. They're stressed to the max. That's all they can think about is their job. They can't mentally take a break when they're home with their family, because all they're thinking about is the next thing that has to happen on the job. And it's spilling over into our city police, our sheriffs, our deputies. It's spilling over into our local law enforcement. So I really encourage you to please get involved and contact your attorney generals, your county attorneys, and just all the steps that Jason told you. I really encourage you to please share this far and wide. There's tunnels that are all throughout the United States where it's easy to traffic arms and drugs and people, and we need to go after that. But I loved his idea of if law enforcement can keep going after the labs, because fentanyl is a huge problem. It only takes a tiny bit of fentanyl to kill people, a tiny, tiny bit. And if it takes just a tiny, tiny bit for an adult to die, imagine if a child gets their hands on it. Just the smallest amount can kill children. And I've heard stories from friends of mine that are in law enforcement that have had to run on scenes with a dead 3 or 4 year old because someone in the house brought fentanyl in and it took the life of the child. So I just want to share that with you today. So make sure you like, share, and subscribe. Share this far and wide. This is an important subject, and we need to get this information out. You know, it was an honor for me to fill in for Dr. John Diamond. He'll be back really soon on his program. I'm just honored that I got to be a part of it. So remember John 15:13, no greater love than this, than a man lays down his life for a friend. Think about that when you see a police officer next time. Maybe buy him a soda, shake his hand, tell him that you're thankful for what he does, and just appreciate him, because appreciation goes really far in a job that's very overwhelming, where the work is great and the workers are few and the stress is very high and people's lives are on your shoulders. It's an intense job. We have a big problem but we have a big God, and we have you, the army of the people, America, we the people, we can fix this problem. It's not impossible, because nothing is impossible for God, and nothing's impossible for us. So we're going to be able to face this and fix this problem. So I just wanted to say thank you again so much for allowing me to be on this show. And I hope to be back another time, but Dr. John Dimel will be joining us again. So I just want to say thank you. And you guys all have a fantastic day.